This is a spiritual reading being given for Catherine Van Wilkenberg on Tuesday the 31st of March 2026 in Victoria, Australia by John Rawson. We stand within the Hall of Memory. And the book of the soul is given into our hands. And the book of the soul, Catherine, is a metaphor. It represents all the incarnations that the soul has entered into since it first came into physical manifestation hundreds of thousands of years ago. It's a heavy book. But as we hold it, certain characteristics are apparent to us. And the first is that the cover of the book, and it's a beautiful old book, I don't have the words to explain the material of it, but it's one of those beautiful old embossed sort of covers. It has on it three characteristics that are relevant, and the first is the colour of the cover, and that is a deep red. That's the colour of life, and it indicates that the soul was drawn into incarnation in the very first place by a primal desire, which no doubt has long since been elevated and transformed, but originally that primal desire was sex. The desire for life, the desire to create life, the desire to enhance life. And so that there is going to be a connection between this soul, between forces of energy, whether that is medical, physical, healing, artistic, what I would call, it's more than creative, it's manifesting, the ability to manifest. And also the blood tie, that from life to life, the ties of blood will be important. And even when you don't have children, for example, as in this incarnation, there is yet a subtle tie, not on a physical level, but certainly on the etheric levels, the levels of memory and obligation to Michael, your son, in this incarnation. And we will find that that colour, that pulsating deep red colour, manifests itself from incarnation to incarnation, particularly when you're young, when the blood, so to speak, is hot, when the urge for adventure and daring and taking risks that others might think is foolhardy, but for you it's just part of the adventure, then that energy runs very passionately within you. And I expect that when you had your reading from Reverend Mario, that that colour would have manifested within the aura. And the interesting thing for me is that the aura colours have changed significantly, which represents a chance for transformation. Or more properly, it says that transformation has occurred. We'll come back to that. The second characteristic of the Book of the Soul is that it has a name or a title. And if I told you that the soul name, or the name that the soul gives to me, was Onomaichi, I expect that wouldn't mean very much. But if I told you it was the bearer of the fire, that might resonate in some way. And the third aspect of the book is a picture, an image that places within a circle in the center of the cover. And in this case, the image is a snapshot which encapsulates the purpose of the soul. Now, each soul actually is an individual soul. Admittedly, the individuality per se was not given till hundreds of thousands of years after incarnation began. But nevertheless, there's something individual about every single soul. Every soul is different. And every soul came into the physical world with different gifts, different motivations, different energies, different passions, different purposes. And as we see you, we are looking at a snapshot from the end of the Atlantean period, about 23,000 years ago. And here you are in a female body, and as I see you, you're in a sort of a cape. You've got a long dress, but a cape with a hood thrown over the back, and it's night. And you're looking back to Atlantis, and what you're looking back at is fire, ruin, devastation, the breaking up of the continent in the seismic shifts that occurred. And in your hand, you're carrying a torch, and it's like an Olympic torch. It's got a flame, and actually, like the Olympic torch, it's a flame that will never go out. So one could say it's not fire as we know it per se, it's the essence of fire. And so the name, the one who bears the fire, was brought into exquisite manifestation in that life when you were one of the last priests or priestesses to leave Atlantis, and the last ones who left took each a torch with them of the sacred fire which burned eternally at the altar of the sun. And your mission there was to go to out into the world and take that torch, take the light, take the fire, and give it to other people. First of all, you went to Africa. And my geography is not as good as it could be, but I think it's the east coast of Africa, about a third of the way down the continent. And you disembarked from the boat, and you had a small party with you. And it took you about 15 or 20 years, but gradually, you and your party made its way to the northern Africa, the region that we would call Egypt today. And where you went, you'd go to a place and you'd stay for a while, and you would found, or not found, but you would gather a small group of local people and share with them something of the flame, so that everywhere you went, you would leave a spark of something, and everywhere you went, there was a renewal, a lifting up of consciousness, and sharing, an integration, and a raising of the culture. And you did this for a long time. Basically, I suppose you could say you followed the course of the Nile from Ethiopia, what is now Ethiopia. And then, after about 20, 25 years, you and your party, now diminished, arrived in Egypt on the banks of the Nile at a place that later became known as, I think, Memphis. And there you met up with the other torchbearers, because when Atlantis was destroyed, there were four torchbearers sent out, one to each part of the world, one went to the Americas, one went to, strangely enough, Ireland, or thereabouts, and another one went to, actually went to Russia, or what is now Russia, and it took them many years to come together, and finally the four groups came together and founded there, or refounded the temple from Atlantis. And as the years went on, the temple itself became a center of healing. It had different incarnations. At one stage it was called the Temple of Beauty, or the Temple Beautiful, and at a later stage still it was responsible for rescuing souls, bringing souls back into contact with their physical body. And so that there are certain gifts, if you like, that you bring into this life. The first is the gift of fire, the ability to ignite sparks in other souls. And my God, do you try. Sometimes there's just sparks. Sometimes there's an exchange, and sometimes you manage, when the other soul is ready for it, you manage to ignite that spark, and wow, then the world changes. And it's interesting that with your son Michael, that part of your work was to bring the soul back, because he was a being whose soul had been deeply injured as long ago as Atlantis, through the forces of Atlantis that severed the connection of the soul. So even though he certainly had different incarnations, at each stage the soul was unable to connect and communicate with the bodies. And he started off as a servant of the rishis, which is a very high position. But gradually he descended and descended in his incarnations, and he had so many in India, which is very interesting, until he reached the lowest point in this life, where he literally became untouchable. So he needed to be touched again. And because his soul's journey was at its lowest point, it was the time when, through the combination of your love and the love of Hans, that the soul could finally be allowed to reconnect. And you probably find that he had a really troubled younger life right up into his 20s, but once he reached the age about 29-30, you should find that, because the soul has finally been allowed to come back and connect and take over and run the show, that his life will change markedly from that age onwards, and he will become independent, which is what you want, mature. The wisdom that is within him will begin to flow. And also, when someone is healed, then that very often opens the flow within that individual to being the healer. And so as time goes on, you may well find that he, in his turn, is healing other souls. And because he's been loved, he can express love. Well, we should open this book, shouldn't we? We've talked a lot about what's on the surface.
Symbol.
The symbol. The individual boarding a ship with a torch of flame. Flaming torch. We open the Book of the Soul, and it opens, of course, to this current incarnation. And the soul is not one for a lot of words, leaves that to the astral mainly, but it communicates to us And it communicates in two distinct ways. The first is that it paints a picture, and that picture is on the right-hand side of the book, as I see it opened. And on the left-hand side, it describes the purpose of this incarnation in a few succinct words or lines, depending. And the picture that the soul creates of itself is through the colours of the aura, because the aura colours are the expression of the enlightenment and power and gifts of the soul. Now, I'm not quite sure what your colours were last time, but I would suspect that they have changed, or at least the first colour has changed markedly. My guess would be that years ago you would have had light red or possibly light rose as your first colour. But now the colour is orange. Not exactly a pure orange. It's an orange with streaks of red in it, which is a remarkable change. It would signify to me that you have moved from reaction, which is the red and the rose, to a mature ability to respond. The thing is that orange is, who am I to tell the artist this, but it's a combination, or produced by a combination of red and yellow. Red for the emotional energy, red for the dynamism, red for the person who has to move, within spirit at least, even if not physically. But then there is yellow. Yellow for thinking, yellow for understanding, yellow for developing a coherent mental and thought system. And the two, when you put the two together, don't shoot me for this, but sometimes you get a politician or someone who enters into the realm of human structures and systems, but with an idealistic or a goal-oriented intention. So it's not just the politician who wants to be popular and to have a nice comfortable job and to knife people in the back, that sort of politician. It's the politician, the rarer one, who actually is impelled by an energy that one, I think you'd say it's an idealism. And you would find it hard to cope with people in politics who seem to you to be cynical or to be just there to toe the party line, because you would want to see politicians and leaders there to make changes. And I think it's going to be really important to you. I think that you will be involved in local politics for the next 10 years, depending on how you define politics, of course, because politics is really the art of getting along with people, the art of inspiring and changing cultures. That's what politics should be. So I see that you're working with this, and I find it interesting that you have a connection with the native peoples, First Nations people, if you like, and that comes from that incarnation when you left Atlantis and you spent a long time travelling in Africa, where you forged connections there with the local spirits, the tribal deities, if you like, and where you went, you not only learned, but you also gifted. So I think that the process of this incarnation from here to eternity, if you like, is about two things. First is learning, and the second is gifting. And gifting in such a way that it's not a decorative thing, but it's a force or a power for change. Oh, we should continue, shouldn't we? With the colours. The second colour is purple. That's really interesting. Whereas the orange represents leadership and rulership very often, so you would have had incarnations. I think Murray used to call you the queen, but the purples represent priestly, I was going to say monkish, sacerdotal, sacramental, if you like, energies or incarnations. And purple is really the mediator, the colour of mediation. And in the old days, the mediator was the priest, because they stood between God, who was in his heaven and unreachable otherwise, and the people who were on earth and unreached. So the priest was the bridge. And I think that you probably have experienced the power of this colour in your life too, that you've been the bridge between people, and especially because of the Atlantean incarnation, the bridge and the traveller between cultures. I'm trying to avoid the word mindsets, but I can't think of a really good word. And I don't mean that it's between white and black, or yellow and brown, or anything like that, but culture is something that often transcends race and ethnicity. And it really represents, culture can represent division within the human psyche. I'm this culture, you're that culture, and we're going to have a division. So we need bridges. We need people who can say to people in one culture, you're a human being, and I respect that, or a spiritual being, even better. And then they go to the other culture and say, and you're a spiritual being, and I respect that too. And so a bridge is built, and it's not built through preaching, through conversion syndrome, through arguments, through persuasion. It's built through energy, which, if you recall, was the fundamental gift with which you came into incarnation as a soul. Lots of blues outside the purple. It's almost hard to distinguish them. But the blues, deep spirituality, deep connection with the spiritual worlds, and a deep intuitive knowledge that manifests almost on an unconscious level within the life, within the speech, within the action. So that it's not that you act from a sort of a rule book of spirituality. Oh, what does my rule book say here? Whether that rule book be a Bible or Quran or the Lotus Sutra, it doesn't matter. But you don't look up some sort of rule book and see how you should act. You know instinctively, intuitively, if you like, that that is how action should happen. And so you live, you walk the talk, so to speak. You live what you understand. From the shoulders, light rose, very unusual colour there. And also light rose in the head. That's not so unusual. Rose, pink if you like, light, very light colour. Artistic, intuitive, imaginative, dreamlike if you like. If you have the rose colours in the head, it's the one who walks with their head in the heavens, and one hopes that the feet stay somewhere on the ground. Interesting that you've got reds around the feet, which is not as good as browns. If you've got browns around the feet, it does mean that you're grounded, but red also is quite a grounding colour, and it does mean that you will move in the directions of your desires and your deep needs. You'll be able to respond to that. But the rose inside the head, visualization, imagination, ability to dream, and sometimes to dream reality or a reality into existence. The one who always has their eyes on the horizon, not for a prize, but simply because it's a horizon. And the challenge is always to look over the horizon, to be more than a bound, which is what the horizon is. It does come with problems. I suppose you could say, oversensitivity, reaction, not always pausing to think and stop, not always pausing to work things out in a planned and logical way, but then you've got hands, so you've allowed for that, or the soul's allowed for that. So you've sort of got a really good situation. You've got people like Rose, they really need a carer. Which means that you need someone to care for you and to look after you and to make sure you don't fall over sometimes, or to pick you up if you do, and to, when you get very upset, to try and bring you back, ground you a little bit, and put things in perspective. Light Rose, when people have a lot of it, means they've had incarnations, by the way, as witches, burned at the stake, as you already know. Cathar, female Cathar Perfecti, burned in the 12th century outside Carcassonne, I think is the name of the city, during the Albigensian Crusades, when the bishop was asked by the general, how shall we distinguish the faithful, that is the Catholics, from the heretics, which is the Cathars? And he said, I don't care, kill the lot. Thus was the ethos of the time, which is no wonder what you became a Cathar, because the church in that period of evolution was especially corrupt. Which is interesting, because you had an incarnation in the Catholic Church just about the 11th century. Here we see you as a woman, female body, and as I see you, you're dressed in beautiful clothes, and you've got jewels and beautiful garments on you. You were the mistress of one of the cardinals at that time, and that would be someone that you would have met in this incarnation. And you were one of the people, interestingly, behind the enthronement of Hildebrand, who became Pope Gregory the VII. That is, you were part of the political forces encouraging or manipulating the mob to insist on the elevation of Hildebrand to the papal throne. You see, it's to do with this carrying this torch that you can inspire and enthuse and ignite, if you like. In that case, it worked out quite well for you in the end, because your patron, the cardinal, did well with Gregory as Pope. The reds around the hands too, which is really good for an artist, because it indicates someone who is connected with the hands and with the physical body through the work that the hands do and the energy that the hands convey sometimes indicates someone who has healing in their hands, or someone who loves to hug or have physical contact with others as a way of connecting. The vortex, which is a cone, if you like, of energy coming down into the crown center, is orange. Different orange from the first color, which is actually very interesting. The orange, as I said, is the color of individuality. It's also the color of the philosopher, the one who likes to think and reason and work things out and have theories and read stuff and read stuff that not a light detective novel or a fantasy book, but read stuff that is about the real world. Sometimes I think the fantasy novels are more about the real world, but that's another point. So that there is this idealistic energy coming into you, and there is no doubt in my mind that this is your path for the rest of this incarnation, to manifest ideals in a real powerful way. Because the first colour has streaks of the red in it, there is still at times a tendency to be motivated by one's passions and to find it hard sometimes to obtain distance from events and people in your vicinity, especially those who are antagonistic or even worse, apathetic to the way you see things evolving. And the other thing that orange is really good at is having a vision of the future. I would say you're absolutely right that your work is being fulfilled. But the question is, what is that work? I think with the greatest respect, Catherine, it's not your work as an artist. Rather, I would see your art as supporting your work, if that makes sense. That art is a vehicle that the soul has chosen in this life to integrate its life's purpose. And I think that the greatest manifestation of that is yet to come. Oh, Melody just reminded me. The cosmic colours, light blue above the head, and light green below the feet. And the cosmic colours, or the influencing colours, are not part of the aura, but they are, as it were, gifts from the spiritual world. So the light blue means an entry into a greater spiritual consciousness, a greater spiritual awareness, but in a way that one might describe as opposite to normal concepts of spirituality or religion, which can be quite binding because one can become bound by one's spirituality into an ism or an offy. A theory, a framework that restrains rather than reveals, whereas the light blue indicates an awakening of the higher intuition. I would say that, because you've asked the question, how can I track my intuition more carefully? I would say don't even worry about it. Your intuition is the voice of God speaking to you, and that will become clearer. Sometimes, in order to make that connection stronger, one has to listen and then say yes. And each time we say yes to that voice and truth, and it's usually about things that we don't particularly want to do, each time we say yes to that, then it enlarges the intuition. It's like a channel which becomes larger and larger until it becomes an ongoing two-way communication. Oh, so it's the light blue. That's connected with the awakening of the higher intuition. And below the feet, the light greens, that's really interesting because that's change coming into your life. That's going in a direction because it's the feet going in the direction perhaps that might surprise you, or one that you hadn't considered, or something that you feel it's the time for this to happen. It's and what's more, it's a movement that will be very healing for you. And because light green is associated with music and dance and singing, it's also associated with rejoicing and feeling of lightness. Whereas the dark blues, the darker colours, they have what we might call a gravitational effect. They drag us towards something. We feel dragged by them. If you've got a lot of deep blue, you feel dragged to be a spiritual person, that you have no choice. I've got to be a spiritual person. I've got to do the right thing here. I've got to have strong morals. I've got to tell people how it is. It turns into the missionary position. You'll excuse the expression. But the lighter colours, they have a levitational effect. And so one walks less heavily upon the earth without being disconnected, but being lifted up by the energies of the earth, which is to say the energies of the physical body and the etheric body. And I've got one more detail to add to the aura before we move on, and that is the image of the overself, the symbol of the overself. And the symbol of the overself is simply a communication from the divine self, the Christ self, the I am, if you like, to the soul. And the soul is not the same as individuality. The soul houses and gives birth to the individuality, as in Revelation 12, where the woman gives birth to the child. So the individuality is not going to communicate with me or any other clairvoyant directly. It's not even going to communicate with you directly. You're not going to get voices in the night. But what it will do, very obligingly, is help us on our way. So it provides a picture, and here's the picture. You are on your knees, with a group of tiles in your hands, and you're laying out a pattern, sort of like an ancient Greek mosaic, and you've done so much of this pattern already, and it's making beautiful images, trees and birds and the trees, and there's only a few spaces left, and you're looking at the tiles, and you're making decisions about where to place them. Probably figured that one out already, but we'll come back to that. I want to say something about that orange colour. Basically, it's a connection with the sun being that is the Christ. And the reason that we get shown the picture of you from Atlantis is because you were one of the last priestesses of the sun temple before everyone fled with the destruction of Atlantis. And there you were actually wounded, I suppose that's the right word, but something happened to the soul there. That the attacks on the temple became very, very strong. And I'm not at all surprised that you have no love at all for the beloved US president and of the present moment, because that entity was part of those who attacked the temple. And he's still attacking the temple. He's still attacking truth. Not him so much as the entities, the spiritual entities that worked through him. But then he gave his permission for that to happen. And something in that last encounter, I don't think he knew, you didn't know him, but hey, that was there. There was, how can I put it, a dart thrown that went into your body, and it was more than just a physical dart, a physical arrow. It carried a destructive impulse effect upon the soul. And it was destructive because it placed within you almost uncontrollable urges and desires, angers, emotions. And because of your training in that time, you were able to perceive what was going on, and you were able to, how can I put it, let it, compartmentalize it. I think that would be it. And yet there are other incarnations, because that energy incarnated with the soul for thousands and thousands of years. And so there's always a struggle between the energy of the sun, which is really the Christ energy, and the antagonistic energies. And sometimes this would produce an incarnation like the one in Hungary, where you were a ruler and you were quite destructive towards people. You ruled with a rod of iron, to say the least, and were that was a very repressive rulership. Well, then you rebounded from that into an incarnation in the 15th century, 16th century, the beginning, I think, of the 16th century, the end of the 15th. Hang on, 17th century, sorry. The beginning of the 17th century, where, oh, that's interesting. Yeah. You were a young man, I can even tell you his name, it was Adam, and I think his surname was Hasselmeyer. You were part of a group of young people who decided they would devise this thing called the Rosicrucian movement. And it was a bit of a joke at the time. But Spirit perked its ears up, because Spirit can always use clever people. And this little group of you it's so funny. You created this a text that was supposed to be a sort of a spoof. It was called the Pharma Fraternitatis, or the Rosicrucian Manifesto. And I won't go into that because you can look that up. But everyone took it seriously. Mm. Now, it turns out that you were spotted by the church as being one of the people to frame or create this document or this movement. And so you went outside Germany, where you were safe because it was a Protestant environment. I think you went into Italy or Spain or a Catholic country, and the church seized you and put you in the galleys for about 10 years. Very difficult, difficult experience. And the reason for that was that when you were the Queen, you'd put lots of these, the Jesuit, the people became Jesuits this time, you put them in prison, had them tortured, had them beaten up, all sorts of things. You weren't very fond of the Catholic Church, funnily enough. So the Catholic Church, when it got a chance, got its hands on you, and you had to do, instead of being looked after, swanning around on a throne all day, you had to sit in a galley and row and row and row and have a very arduous life. But it's interesting that you were released in the end. Although I have a suspicion that knowing you probably escaped, I think you engineered your own release. You've always been very resourceful. You died back in Germany in the later part of the 17th century. So what I would say, Catherine, is that there's a love and a fear of the Christ within you. That on the one hand, there is the deep connection with purpose from the Sun Temple, when the spirit of the Sun Being would sometimes come in, enter in, and manifest something to those who were there. But then there's also the reaction, and possibly one could say it's a reaction to formalization or structuralism or people being dogmatic or people turning things into a structure. It's interesting you shouldn't have had a problem with Mario, because you knew him, as I said, in the 11th century. In fact, you helped engineer his rise to the papacy. But I want to come back to the Rosicrucian incarnation, because there was someone else involved in that incarnation. And the Rosicrucian devised an identity, this person that didn't really exist, called Christian Rosenkreutz. The initials are CR. And associated with that was someone who became part, very important part, of the centre in the 20th century. And this, he was part of what gave real spiritual power to the Rosicrucian movement. And I said before that when people got intelligence, spirit can perk its ears up and open its eyes and say, well, we can always use intelligence. We can always use people who are clever. And so through this person, through this individual, a certain energy flowed into that movement. And that energy was about freedom. It was about expressing Christ in secret. It was about connecting with the world. That's why in the Rosicrucian terminology, the book which has all the knowledge is called Liber M, which is Liber Mundus. That is the book of the world. And so you have an association with this. You know that the book of the world, the book of nature, if you like, the book of nature spiritualized, holds all the answers, and that connects you again to First Nations people, Aboriginal people of any country, in fact, that you will always be aware that there is a connection to be made with the world of the natural world, but the natural world spiritualized through this, through the understanding. And even when you don't have it directly yourself, you will know people, or you will express this through the people that you meet, through the connections that you create, through the joining of different consciousnesses. The thing is, we don't all have to be the same, do we? The Western consciousness, it's pretty crap, but it does have its good points, like television and computers and fast cars and trifle. It does have some good things about it. And so does, say, the Aboriginal culture, the culture of the First Nations people. They have a connection with the land in a spiritual way. Where we see physical, they see spiritual. And we can't have that consciousness. And they can't really have ours. They might invent a pavlova recipe, but it'll be claimed by the whites, don't worry. So there is, what is, can happen is that we can rejoice in the difference, that we can see power in difference, because that represents uniqueness and individuality. And what we can do is talk to it. We can, each side can talk to the other, and each side can be connected by the bridge. And you'll remember that you had that have that as a connection with your soul from a long time ago. And I will say something still on the Rosicrucians. Don't worry, I haven't forgotten that. That individual, that entity whom you knew then, you knew again in the 20th century. And he was, how can I put it? The individual, or the energy known as Christian Rosicrucians, incarnates every century now, since the Rosicrucians got going, and incarnates in order to manifest the spirit of freedom and independence, especially from church and religious structures. So this energy is incredibly individualistic and freeing. And it has this funny thing that it always incarnates, it gives its identity away, or its purpose away, by incarnating in an individual with the same initials as Christian Rosicrucians. And you knew this individual, CR. His name, as you knew it, was Colin Reed. So you had also a connection with the spirit of freedom, not just with Mario, but also, interestingly enough, with Colin. Now you've asked the question about legacy. You know, I wouldn't worry about legacy. No occultist ever worries about legacy, about what they're leaving behind. Because that's part of the future. And if we leave a legacy behind, we leave just another structure. And those who do manage to leave legacies behind, like Rudolf Steiner, for example, they, in spirit, become very sad, because the structure that they called their legacy becomes a prison. If you want to leave something behind for others to follow, you could leave behind your spirit and the spirit of freedom. That is the spirit of someone who is not bound, who is not going to be told what to do by external forces and external concepts, someone who is daring, someone who is audacious, someone who reaches out, someone who connects, someone who carries the torch, someone who builds bridges. And, oh yes, the symbol of the over-self. Well, here you are, you've doing this, building this wonderful mosaic, which is of course the story, the picture, the mosaic of this incarnation. And the mosaic is pretty well done. And from where I've seen it, it looks like it's a beautiful tree with foliage and wonderful intricate branches and beautiful birds singing. And you're at the other end of this mosaic and you're mulling over which tiles will go where to complete the picture. And of course, what we're looking at is the soul mulling over how to complete this incarnation. What remains to be slotted into place? And I can tell you what needs to be slotted into place, but it might come as a shock. But what needs to happen is that you unite within yourselves the purples, which are the mediator, and also the priesthood, the priestly nature that you have, which was misdirected in previous lives, so that you would associate the priesthood, say, with the Anglican Church or the Catholic Church or this or that or the other. But no, the priest is simply the elder, and you are being invited to be an elder in the new community, not a land community, though that has value, but that's the job of other people, but the community of illumination, I might say, not just communication, not just knowledge, spiritual knowledge. And that purple should connect with the orange, and in the end, orange is the colour of Christ. So what you can do is you can become a priest of the order of Melchizedek, complete your mosaic, leave no legacy, disappear at the end into nothingness, and leave behind a burst of sunshine. So shall it be.
So shall it be.